You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I'm your host, Adam Miller. And of course, we are in the middle of our Christmas season, and it's a great privilege to think about how to make Christmas meaningful for not just the family, but for us as individuals, as we think about how to approach this season as an aspect of our worship. We're joined today by Alexandra Kirkendall, who is the author of a book called Loving My Actual Christmas, An Experiment in Relishing the Season. It can be something that gets away from us very easy, so I'm really excited to delve into this book. So, Alexandra, thank you so much for being a part of the many voices for that one message.
Oh, thanks, Adam. I'm happy to.
Why don't you get started by telling us a little bit about your story and your connection with Christmas? I'm assuming that Christmas is a pretty exciting holiday for you as an individual. Tell us a little bit about your connection with this holiday.
Sure. Well, I'm a mom of four, and, you know, moms in general are the Christmas orchestrators. Women, really, are the Christmas orchestrators. I've heard it said that Mary was the first woman to birth Christmas, and women have been birthing Christmas ever since. For some reason, we take on the job of making Christmas happen, because all of the details are things that we tend to love or that we tend to value. And so we get caught up in all of the Christmas making and Christmas orchestrating that we get so caught up in it, we get overwhelmed. And that can often leave us stressed. It can leave us exhausted, and we aren't really in the season. And so a few years ago, I had a Christmas like that where I had family visiting. My youngest was a toddler. I had a very busy life in just kind of the day-to-day normal life, rest of the year kind of life. And when I added on all of the extras of Christmas, I ended the season exhausted and really angry. And I thought, there's something wrong here. I shouldn't be angry that Christmas happened. I need to do something different. And that's where the idea for this book came. And as I talked to other women, I realized I wasn't the only one who was creating this sense of chaos because I was overdoing it during the season.
Yeah, I think this is an issue for everyone, but I agree with you. The hard work is done by the mothers and the women who are making all of the arrangements and making all of the things just perfect and nice. My mom was always a busybody on Christmas Day, making sure that everyone was in the right positions, everyone was dressed nice for the pictures. How do you even approach this, not only from the busy schedule, but from the spiritual side? You got a lot of Marys and you got a lot of Marthas. How do you get more of that worship out of the mothers who are busy in the kitchen?
Well, that's where my experiment came in. I thought, how do I get to the heart of Christmas? I know that there's a disconnect, right? The holiday is meant to be about God's love for us, and yet I'm exhausted and stressed out. There is a huge disconnect there. So I went to the church liturgical calendar and I looked at Advent, the season of preparation. And I thought, okay, there has to be something here for me. Christians for centuries have been celebrating these themes of hope, love, joy, and peace as they prepare their hearts for the Messiah to arrive, that maybe that's a good starting place. And so I did an experiment where the weeks leading up to Christmas, I asked myself, okay, if this week I just focus on hope, what does it mean to have hope in a world that feels very dark sometimes? What does it mean to have hope in my own life where some things are difficult? And I will say that, you know, there's this part of Christmas that is just the self-induced crazy making that we women tend to participate in. But then there's also the real grief that can come up at Christmas time, because this is an annual marker. And we all can remember where we were this time last year at Christmas, which means we can compare where we are now with where we were a year ago. And often the year has been difficult, whether we've lost someone or we've had a health diagnosis or one of our kids or family members is not in a place that we'd like them to be. If it's an area that's difficult for us year round, that pain and that grief gets heightened during the holiday season. And so that's true whether man, woman, old or young, we often feel this intensified grief during the holidays. And so that's a very real thing that we bring to Christmas. And so how do we delve into hope and love and joy and peace? And that's where my experiment was. It was really focusing in on those four themes one at a time and asking, how do I find this where God is already providing this in my life, and how do I get more of it?
It is interesting, through the tradition of Advent and Christmas, we have that very clearly laid out structure, and it can often get lost in kind of the tinsel and the lights of the holidays. But do you think it's really that simple kind of format of having something very tiny to focus on amongst the busyness and the chaos of the holiday season, something very simple to focus on for each week?
Yeah, I think it really helps us recalibrate, is what I say in the book, our minds, because we do get distracted by all of the things we should do or think we need to do that are on our to-do list. And often we do have responsibilities we need to follow through with. But if the backdrop or even the focus turns to, say, joy, and we are having a hard Christmas season, then we look at, okay, God is joy to the world. We sing this song, Joy to the World. He has arrived. What does that mean in the midst of my grief? What does that mean in the midst of headlines that make my heart ache? And it really is a perspective shift. So this title of Loving My Actual Christmas means that we find Christ no matter our circumstances, that it's our actual life that we're living, that we can live in what I call the whens and if onlys, you know, when we have a bigger house, when we have a bigger budget, when we're married, when we have another baby, then we'll have a Christmas worth remembering. Or if only my sister lived closer, if only the children would come home for the holidays, then we would have a Christmas that is worth celebrating. And I don't think that that's what God intends for us and wants for us as we mark His birth every year. He wants us to remember that He came for the brokenhearted. And so if we're feeling some grief during the holidays, we are that much closer to the heartbeat of the Christmas story. And when we focus in on those simple themes, then we can see how the Christmas story is really playing itself out in our world, in our homes, and in our hearts.
I think that you touched on something that might be a real pressure for a lot of women, and the idea of having the right emotions during the holiday season. I feel that way sometimes as well. You know, my attitude is not the attitude of those that are surrounding me, so I'm obviously missing something, or I'm having a negative component to the holidays. This is a real reminder that there is a connection piece here. There's a lot of emotions that can come around this holiday season, and that's kind of what you're talking about here, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you think about the first Christmas story, I mean, they weren't worried about how the mantle was decorated or the perfect Christmas card, right? They were in the middle of the typical holiday stressors, family dynamics. I'm pretty sure Joseph's parents weren't thrilled at the situation. And here's poor Mary. She's probably scared out of her mind, not knowing what has happened to her or even where she is. Finances, they're essentially homeless. They're sleeping in a barn. I can't imagine that Mary thought that this was the perfect birth plan to have her baby, right? In the middle of the animals, really in the middle of the yuck. And God could have come anyway onto this planet. And this is how He chose to step onto earth, the way all of us did, in the most humble manner, to the most humble family. And if we look at that first Christmas and imagine it from the characters' perspectives, from their realities, their actual lives, we feel a little closer to the story, because it wasn't about Pinterest. It was about God showing His love, the angels coming to the shepherds and waking them up on a very ordinary night. They were essentially at work, working the night shift, and the angels appeared with this news that changed the history of the world. And so we may feel like, you know, my life is pretty ordinary or even kind of disappointing. This is our annual marker to remember. Here's the good news in the middle of the ordinary. God came. He pursued us in a way that is hard for our minds to comprehend, and we can't really. So we just stand in the wonder of it and the miracle of it and let that permeate our hearts. Even if we're not feeling it naturally or feeling it instinctively, to step into that story, our hearts can't help but be changed and softened a little bit.
Mm. Now, this came out of your own experiment. So your own experience is in this book. And how much does that play into changing your kind of preconceptions of what Christmas should be and what it actually turns out to be? How did that actually affect you in the outcome of putting this all together?
Well, it's interesting because I had a plan to write this book and do this experiment. And, you know, all the plan was in place starting last July. And this chronicles my Christmas last year, my 2016 Christmas. And in between when I was all ready to set the book, to write the book, and when I actually started writing it, my stepdad passed away. Mm. And so it was our first Christmas without him. He died in October. And so when Advent came, my grief was very raw still. And the grief of those around me, my mom, my kids, I was helping them as they were processing it. And I thought, isn't this interesting that God allowed this to happen in the year that I'm writing about, enjoying the season no matter the circumstances, when I'm really needing to grapple with grief in a new way, really, a way I have never grappled with it before, in the context of this Christmas story. And so my own daily life and daily experience is woven in throughout the story in very detailed ways. And really what I try to do is just offer a place for people to see where I find God in my ordinary. And so I try to include experiences that everyone can relate to, like going to the grocery store, getting honked at in traffic. Like, those are things that are kind of universal experiences. But because I had on that perspective of searching out God's peace in that moment, how it changed even the most mundane experiences, and I was able to experience the miracle anew, which I think is what the purpose is in celebrating Christmas every year, that annual marker. Our hearts need to hear that story every year because we may be coming out of a very hard year, or we may unknowingly be going into a difficult year. And if we have recalibrated our hearts towards the season, we are better able to face whatever the year is going to throw our direction.
Mm. It's very important. It's one of the focal points of our ministry, even here on a radio program that's airing throughout the year, is a reminder to come back to that gospel message. But you're right, the Christmas season is certainly a time where our perception is more aware of what we're celebrating, but yet that can even get lost very quickly in the busyness of it. What are some of the biggest detractors that you found that got you away from keeping the main thing the main thing?
Well, I think we feel like there are a lot of shoulds that have to do with purchasing. You know, money stress is huge over the holidays. Family stress can be huge because often we're dealing with family dynamics that are difficult all year round. But again, they're heightened over the Christmas season, or we are being put in situations with people that we are able to avoid all year. And often we avoid them with good reason. And yet we see them because we're at some big family get together or some other gathering where we see them annually. And so that stress of those dynamics or of money or even just of our schedule of being overly busy and adding on all of the extra merrymaking can detract from us really sitting in the story. And I think about in Luke chapter 2, verse 19, Mary is sitting there and the shepherds arrive and then they leave after verse 19 and they're running through the streets and they're telling everybody what they have seen. So they're kind of the hubbub of Christmas, right? They're the party. They're the loud noise. And Mary, in verse 19, it says, pondered all of these things in her heart. So I picture her as a new mom holding her baby, sitting in the middle of the first Christmas chaos and pondering the miracle of the Christmas story. It doesn't mean that she had all the answers or that everything was tied up in a neat bow. She was just sitting in it and considering it and probably thinking, what does this mean for my life? And what does the year ahead hold? I have no idea. I'm sure there were a lot of unanswered questions in her life, and yet she sat and considered it. And I think that's really what God wants us to do, is to sit and consider the miracle. And so even 10 minutes a day, I tell people, if you sit just for 10 minutes a day, undistracted, maybe put on a Christmas carol, maybe just sit by the Christmas tree in your house, and for 10 minutes consider the miracle between now and the 25th, your heart will be better prepared, and you'll be better able to handle all of those other distractions because you'll have done your daily recalibrating.
Mm. I think a lot of people go into Christmas with a high level of optimism, and I think that sometimes that optimism can get them in a little bit of trouble because there's lack of preparation. What's a good balance there of having that excitement about the holidays, but also having a very level-headed approach with a plan and an attack on how to deal with the, sometimes it's, let's to be honest, there's a lot of disappointment when things don't meet our expectations.
Mm-hmm. Well, first I'll say God will meet you in the disappointment. So if that happens, and maybe it's inevitable, we all go in with certain expectations, know that God is there in it. But I do talk in the first week of my experiment about this idea of hope, or many churches use the word expectation during that first week of Advent in place of hope. But it's that same idea that our hearts are expecting or hoping for the good news of God to arrive on earth. But that is a great time to talk, if you haven't already, about expectations with those around you that you do the holiday with, to say, this is what I'm hoping for or expecting, and what are you hoping for and expecting? And then you have some time to kind of negotiate and execute the plan. At the back of the book, I have kind of my best holiday tips for the holiday orchestrators in how to make things work. And a lot of it has to do with paring down. How do you choose which traditions to keep this year and which to let go of so that your schedule has some relief? How do you create some financial gap or, financial margin in your life during the holidays? And how do you create a budget? What are the best ways to do that? And how do you give gifts on a budget? So some real practical ways to relieve some of the common stressors that we find during the holidays. But I do think the earlier you can acknowledge your expectations, even if it's just you writing them down and giving them to God and saying, here's my honest expectation, here's my honest hope for the season. But even better if you can then talk to other people about what their expectations are, so there's not a conflict on the 24th as you're driving to church about, wait, you thought we were going to do what tomorrow? Like, at least talk about it a few weeks ahead of time so that there's some space there. Then it is going to go more smoothly. And that stress that you're afraid that maybe other people have different expectations, but you don't want to talk about it, is relieved once you get it out on the table. It may be a hard conversation to have, but sometimes the stress of having the conversation is worse than the actual conversation.
Yeah, I love your book because it not only gives a good devotional, it gives something to reflect on for each week here in Advent, but it also provides some real practical advice. You have a section there that deals with some of the just the kind of daily things that might get in the way. As you pair these two together, I think it's kind of important, isn't it, to have a clear biblical focus on what the holiday is, but also some reminders and some practical implications of where it can often get distracted.
Yes, and I call those the hows and the whys of Christmas. So the hows are really just, how are we going to make all of this happen? How are we going to make the extras in our schedule happen? And so that's what those practical tips are for. And again, those are things that have to do with the stressors that I hear about when I talk to other women who are feeling stressed about the holidays. And then the why is, why do we do this in the first place? And getting back to those themes of Advent really helps us get to the heart of the Christmas story, the hope, love, joy, and peace. If we are pursuing those things, our hearts are better prepared to receive the baby when he arrives on the 25th. I think for those of us who have had children, this idea of nesting, of preparing our homes and our schedules and our lives for the arrival of a new baby is something that we talk about as new parents. And in a sense, we are all nesting. We are preparing our homes and our hearts for the arrival of the Christ child. And if we focus in on these things as we approach the 25th, I think our hearts will be better prepared. And then I talk in the experiment about the 12 days of Christmas, that often we collapse on the 26th and we say, well, that was exhausting. But this idea in the liturgical calendar that there's this extended feast of Christmastide is really a time for us to extend that celebration for days that lead us into the new year, so that we're going into 2018 still celebrating the birth of Christ and not just kind of washing our hands of it and saying, okay, well, now it's time to go on a diet and move on.
I want to talk a little bit about kind of the fallout of Christmas, as you've kind of mentioned it already. When Christmas doesn't meet your expectations, that can cause a great stealing of joy from the experiment of Christmas. Can you tell us a little bit about how to guard against that to make sure that our expectations are based on that reality, but also that we don't have anything that could steal it away from us as we're focusing in on the meaning of the holiday?
Right. Well, I think a lot of our expectations and disappointment around them have to do with other people. And so we need to remember that we can only control our own responses in relationships. And so this gets to the heart of, if a relationship is strained or difficult throughout the year, that difficult relationship and that grief and that pain around it is heightened over the holidays, because we go into the holidays with this yearning for something special and magical. And really, I think it's because our hearts are wired for the yearning to receive God's love. And yet, if we try to fill that yearning with other people, other relationships, or even gift giving and stuff, or feeding people and loving them in kind of a tactile way, then we are going to be disappointed on the 26th. Now, all of those things, all of the practical love and the gifts, can be wonderful, beautiful expressions of love. But if we misplace that filling that hole and that yearning with those things, we're going to be disappointed. And so, especially around relationships, I think we need to remember we cannot control other people's responses. We can only control our end of the relationship. So to go into it with that head knowledge, it sometimes still hurts in our heart, and the disappointment can still be there. But I think having that at the forefront of our minds certainly helps. And then staying steeped in the story and knowing that really and truly what our heart yearns for is knowing that God pursued us, that he loves us, and that he stepped onto earth for us. If we keep going back to that, I think we're going to guard our hearts a little more.
Now, this whole book is based upon your experiment. You actually went through and did all of these various things and learned from hard experience the challenges that you were going through during that time as well. But I'm curious to hear about how you went into this and how it changed your expectations, or what surprised you in the process of putting this all together. Because I'm sure you planned everything out. You've been doing this since July, Christmas in July, preparing for Christmas. So you had 6 months to build up for this. What surprised you about the experiment?
Well, I think I went into it really with the idea that I would learn some of the tactical tips, some of the how-tos to make the holiday run more smoothly. And I was collecting ideas from other women, you know, how do you handle Christmas cards and how do you handle gifts with your kids and minimizing the amount that you spend and how much you buy, and, you know, kind of those tactical things. And I did learn some tips and some things that worked for me along the way. But what I didn't expect was how God would meet me in the hard, and that he came to be with me in it. So when we think of Emmanuel, God with us, it means he's next to us. He's there in the pain and the difficult. And so as I was dealing with the grief of my stepfather dying, as I was dealing with some very hard things happening in the world. As I was dealing with just the basic difficulty of parenting and walking around on this earth, to know that God was with me really was the perspective shift that surprised me. And then in the midst of that, this idea that it's an annual marker that our heart yearns for, and that's why we celebrate the holiday, was really what opened my eyes. And I'll tell you a story that I share in the book. I was at the movies with my girls after Christmas, because one of my practical tips was move some of the holiday fun activities to the 12 days of Christmas. So do them after the 25th. You don't have to cram in everything before the 25th. So it was a few days after Christmas, and we were at a movie at the movie theater, and we were getting out of the movie, and it was bitterly cold and kind of snowing sideways. And I remember grabbing my two youngest girls' hands because they didn't want them to slip in the snow. And I looked down at my seven-year-old, and I just had this overwhelming sense of love for her. And I said, "Gracelyn, I love you." It just kind of came off very naturally. And what struck me was her lack of response. So as a seven-year-old, she just didn't even change her gait. She just kept looking straight ahead. I wasn't sure if she even heard me. And so as a mom, I'm having this internal discussion in my head of, okay, I'm not sure she heard me. And I thought, that doesn't actually matter. I'm going to tell her over and over. And in fact, I'm going to tell her whole life that I love her. And her response doesn't impact my desire or my willingness to tell her that I love her. And because I had been considering this Christmas season and why we do it in the first place, it was like God opened my eyes in that moment. And I thought, this is Christmas. It's this annual, I love you, that God says, remember, I came for you. I love you. And it doesn't matter what our response has been in the past. He's going to tell us the same. It doesn't matter if we've had a hard year or a great year, a difficult year or an easy year. We can depend on that message of, I love you, I love you, I love you, over and over again. And we need it. We need to hear it. And so that's, I think, really what I realized about Christmas, is that our hearts yearn to hear it, and that by the time a year has rolled around, my heart is really longing for it again.
Mm. A great perspective, a fresh perspective on how to make Christmas more impactful, more meaningful. A great conversation about an excellent book called Loving My Actual Christmas, An Experiment in Relishing the Season. We've been talking with the author, Alexandra Kirkendall. Alexandra, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and sharing this book. It's a great reminder, and hopefully our listeners are responding as well to make this a more meaningful and purposeful holiday to reflect on the worship of our Savior.
That's my hope, Adam. Merry Christmas.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.